Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports every single week, do a little bit differently than anyone else does. You know, we're going to give you a little bit of common sense, going to give you maybe just a tiny, tiny bit of sarcasm here and there. If you would like to recommend the podcast to a friend, to a family member, maybe you see those people around the holidays that you don't normally see, make sure you let them know. They can find the podcast in a number of different places. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play, of course, Audio Boom, or Blog Talk Radio, and they can subscribe to it there. Or you can head over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, where you will also find an article or two every single week. And we do them Daily Dose style. Might be a little bit of a different article than you might be used to, but you might head over there this week. It's something a little bit different this week. You might want to check that out. Some breaking news that we were able to run down. Also, be sure to stop by our podcast network, rogueintel.com, where Duff over at Rogue Intel does a good job of getting up new and different podcasts every single week. You got to make sure that you stop by there. If you got a question, you got a comment, maybe you need some advice, maybe you'd like to offer a suggestion to us, you can hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson won the 2016 Heisman Trophy. I want to discuss him winning that just a little bit. We're going to preview a few of the more interesting bowl games coming up this week. Might actually be not very many, I'll be honest. Not very many, but there might actually be a few games worth your time to sit down and watch if you want to watch some college football before it is all over. We will take a look at some of the big stories from NFL Week 14. One storyline coming out this week that you may have missed. The NFL games for London were announced this week. Don't know if you saw this. Did you see the teams that are going over there? Here's our best that we're sending over to London. Baltimore versus Jacksonville. The Saints versus Miami, Minnesota versus Cleveland, and the Arizona Cardinals versus the Los Angeles Rams. Sorry, London. Good luck with that. We don't want to. It's basically, those are basically games we don't want to watch, so we're going to send them over there. We've got to talk a few stories from NFL Week 14. And, you know, there are a number of teams in the NFL that are getting ready for the postseason. Maybe they're hoping for a playoff berth. I want to talk to you today a little bit about some of the teams that are warming up down the stretch. I've got four teams you don't want to play right now. We might actually talk a little bit of baseball and why some good young NBA teams are struggling despite having talent on their roster. It's not like they don't have talent. They've got talent, but they're still struggling. Plus, we do have a very important interview you're going to want to make sure you stick around for, and as we do every single week, our Daily Dose Top 5. I want to talk a little bit of baseball. You know, the New York Yankees made some news last week when they brought back hard-throwing pitcher Aroldis Chapman and got him signed to another free agent deal. And this was after a season in which the Yankees finished 84-78. They've got a very young, talented roster. They were one of the most dangerous teams in the league down the stretch. No one wanted to see the Yankees make the playoffs, I'll be honest, because they were red hot. That's actually not what I want to talk about, though. Baseball season's long and boring enough without talking about, you know, the winter meetings and what day pitchers and catchers report. I don't care about that stuff. You guys know that. No, but I do want to talk about this. It was announced last week that the Yankees are going to retire Derek Jeter's number 2 jersey next May. And let's be honest, Jeter is no doubt deserving of all the accolades he gets. He won 5 World Series. He was a 14-time All-Star. He's the franchise leader in hits, doubles, stolen bases, at-bats, singles, hit-by-pitches, hot women dated. I mean, Derek Jeter owns everything. He's deserving of whatever you want to give him. But here's the problem. In their 115-year history, including Derek Jeter now with the number 2, the Yankees will have retired 22 numbers. Here's the problem. There's only 99 numbers available. In fact, Jeter is the last single-digit number that hadn't been retired yet. Now number 2 is off the boards. There are no single-digit numbers left in a New York Yankees uniform. The Yankees are seriously running out of numbers. There's only 77 numbers left. You know there's more guys they're going to retire. Like, they're not done. First off, let's get this out on the table. And we have to say this. It's been a long time stance here at the Daily Dose. Retiring numbers is idiotic. It is one of the dumbest traditions ever. If you want to retire someone's jersey, retire their jersey. But we have this twisted idea that it's somehow like sacrilegious for anyone else to wear someone else's number. Look, if you want to go join the Chicago Bulls and wear number 23, that's up to you. Good luck. If you want to come to Denver and wear number 7 and you earn a spot on the roster and it's available, hey, that's your prerogative. If you join the New York Yankees and want to wear number 2, I'm not going to be offended if you wear that number. Now, if you want number 2 with Jeter on the back, or you want the Broncos 7 with Elway on the back, or the 23 in Chicago with Jordan on the back, then that's a problem. But New York Yankees, you need the numbers. What do you do when you run out of numbers? It's going to happen, apparently, because they just keep retiring them and retiring them. Do you start using letters? Do you go triple digits? Yeah, what number are you? Just look for me. I'm 147. Oh, good. That's a nice jersey. Good old 268. I like that. Maybe they go to Roman numerals. I don't know. Roman numerals get big and bulky on a jersey. I don't know if that works out. You're slowly running out of numbers, Yankees. And it does sound kind of weird when the announcer comes on the stadium. Now batting third, he's letter H in your program, but number 1 in your hearts. That's kind of stupid. It's kind of cheesy. Stop retiring numbers. I don't care if anyone ever gets their number retired. I think it's idiotic. You can retire that specific jersey. The number's still available. We don't just break the mold of the number because you used to wear it. Sorry. Now, we won't let them wear your jersey, but the number's still out there. New York Yankees, dumb. That's a dumb move. All right, let's switch over to college football. You know, college football, saw a few more hires. Saw a few more coaches going different places. And a few hires that might have surprised people a little bit. A little bit. Oregon hired South Florida head coach Willie Taggart. Now, you might have heard that name, Willie Taggart. I said, who? Who is that? Here is who Willie Taggart is. He was the running backs coach under Jim Harbaugh back at Stanford. Willie Taggart is going to bring that tough, hard-nosed style to Oregon. Now, why does that matter? That's not what Oregon does. Oregon is the pass-happy, throw-it-all-over-the-place, Marcus Mariota kind of offense. But here's the problem. One, playing in that climate, you do start to get into those games where you can't throw the ball around as much as you want to. Two, what else is Oregon known for? Well, they wear the different colored uniforms. This week, they wear green uniforms. Next week, they're going to wear yellow ones. And then they're going to wear pink ones. And then they're going to wear orange ones. It's all kind of gotten stupid. And wearing different colored uniforms every week only goes so far because now everyone does it. I'm watching Colorado this year. Huge game. Here comes the black and gold of the Buffaloes. Except for they were like white and silver. What? I don't even know who the... So it's not unique anymore to say that we have all these different uniforms. But at the end of the day, you might want to start competing with the Washingtons and the Stanfords. And that's one thing Oregon hasn't been doing. Not in the last couple of years. And you know, I'm looking at that Oregon roster. I don't follow Oregon. I don't have any allegiance to Oregon. I'm just going down their roster. And here's what I see when I look at their roster right now. Kids from Texas, California, Oklahoma, Hawaii, Missouri, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Pennsylvania. Now that all sounds great, but Oregon, where is your actual recruiting base? You're spreading yourself really, really thin. I'll tell you what, Oregon, go ahead and focus on California, Oregon, and Washington, and you'll be just fine. You're not Duke basketball. You can't just get people from all over the country. That's not how that works. Willie Taggart will come in. He'll make Oregon a little more physical. He'll make them a little tougher where they can play in some bad weather, and they can play maybe in some rainy conditions, and they can match up against some of the more physical teams. That's always been the knock on Oregon. And the other thing Willie Taggart will do, he'll get Oregon a recruiting base where he says, you know, let's just focus on California. He knows that area well, having coached at Stanford. Let's just focus here. Let's stop trying to recruit all over the entire country. Another college that hired a head coach, Houston, hired Major Applewhite. Now, it's kind of funny when Houston hired him, because the rumor was that it was just a matter of time before Lane Kiffin was given that job. Lane Kiffin, the offensive coordinator at Alabama, looked like he was primed to take the Houston job. But then you just know those Houston boys are still mad that Texas took their head coach, Tom Herman. And so they were just like, we're going to take a Longhorn instead. Take that. Take that, Texas. We'll show you. We're going to take Major Applewhite. You're not getting him. So they go get a Longhorn to be their coach. A few things about Lane Kiffin we're going to talk about. South Florida went and hired Charlie Strong. And that was also kind of funny because, again, that was another job that people thought might go to Lane Kiffin. But remember, Charlie Strong was at the University of Florida for like 10 to 12 years as an assistant coach. He has Florida ties. He knows Florida. And the cupboard down at South Florida in Tampa is not bare. Quarterback Quentin Flowers will be returning. The Bulls will be very, very solid. And Charlie Strong, you know, ego probably took a little bit of a hit getting fired from Texas. He'll have South Florida very good. Meanwhile, Lane Kiffin goes to Florida Atlantic. And there are a number of reasons why he ended up there. First off, because these are all stepping stone jobs, all these jobs. Whether it's Houston, whether it's South Florida, whether it's Florida Atlantic, these are all stepping stone jobs. These aren't final destination kind of jobs. And we all know that Lane Kiffin wants to go back up the coaching ladder. It's hard to hire Lane Kiffin, though, when in his mind, he's hoping to be at your university for maybe 2 years tops. So Houston grabs Major Applewhite, who they hope will be there maybe 3, 4, 5 years. South Florida takes Charlie Strong, who knows recruiting in Florida, as good as anyone in the entire country. Charlie Strong knows how to recruit. But here's something to think about. Now with Lane Kiffin going down to Florida Atlantic, here are the current college coaches in the state of Florida right now. In the state, and there is a ton of talent in the state of Florida. That is a huge, huge recruiting base. Jim McElwain at Florida. Jimbo Fisher, Florida State. Mark Richt is at Miami. Now Charlie Strong is at South Florida. Butch Davis is at Florida International. Remember Butch Davis at Miami? He knows Florida pretty well. Scott Frost is at Central Florida, and now Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic. You go recruiting in the state of Florida, good luck. Hey, did you watch the Army-Navy game on Saturday?
And for the first time since 2001, our soldiers overseas will watch as their colleagues get this thing set.
Of course, that clip comes to us via CBS Sports. Yes, Army ended a 14-year streak and beat Navy 21-17. I told you last week, watch the Army-Navy game. It'll be very, very entertaining. The Army streak of losing was the longest by either side since the series began back in 1890. Army hadn't sang second since 2001. If you don't know what the significance is, at the end of the Army-Navy game, each team goes and sings the alma mater of the other team. So everyone goes and sings Navy's alma mater, and then everyone goes and sings Army's alma mater. And you sing the winning team's second. You sing the losing team first, everybody goes and sings it, then you go sing the winning team second. The motto of the Army-Navy game is always, let's sing second. Congrats to the Black Knights. Remember, it's only a rivalry if both teams actually win every once in a while. And so it was nice to see Army actually get a win for a change in that series. We've seen Navy beat them for so, so long. And to see the reaction of the Army cadets. Because you know, and maybe you don't know this, but in the Army-Navy game, they think about that game. If you go to that academy, you think about that Army-Navy game 364 days of the year. And they really do. There's a phenomenal book written by John Feinstein called Civil War. And it takes you inside the Army-Navy game and just the rivalry that that is. It is absolutely incredible how much attention the people at those academies spend thinking about that Army-Navy game. Every single day, beat Navy, beat Navy. They sign their letters. Thanks for all you've done. Sincerely, beat Navy and sign their name. I mean, it is just huge, huge in that rivalry between those two schools to actually win that game. Good for Army. Got to win. Now, Lamar Jackson won the Heisman Trophy on Saturday. Was he the most deserving player? I don't know. Remember, Heisman voters like to be wowed. They like to be surprised. They want you to show them something maybe they haven't seen before. Maybe you're showing it to them in a little bit different way. So early on, they were seeing things from Lamar Jackson at Louisville that were amazing. He's just a sophomore. He looked like Vince Young, but faster. He looked like Michael Vick, but more explosive. So they were seeing things from Lamar Jackson that were absolutely incredible. And then he lost his last two games to Houston and Kentucky. But again, the Heisman doesn't have any set criteria. What is required to win the Heisman? Is it the best player on the best team? If that's the case, it probably goes to someone on Alabama this year. There wasn't really even anybody from Alabama even in the conversation. So you couldn't do that this year. Is it the MVP? You could make a case for a number of different guys. You take Deshaun Watson off of Clemson. They probably aren't anywhere near what they've done this year. Take a number of those players off. Take JT Barrett off of Ohio State. What is Ohio State going to do this year? Probably not what they have. So I don't know if it's MVP. Now, the award itself says it is given to the most outstanding player. Probably not. Is Lamar Jackson the best player in the country? I don't think so. If he were eligible for the NFL draft, would Lamar Jackson be the top draft pick next spring? I doubt it. I think that pick will probably go to someone like Jonathan Allen from Alabama, the defensive end. Maybe Myles Garrett or someone out of Texas A&M. And they weren't even being talked about for the Heisman. So give it to Lamar Jackson. He seems like a nice kid. He's very, very fun to watch. He's entertaining to watch. Is he the best player in the country? I don't know. Is he the most outstanding player in the country? Maybe. Maybe not. He's exciting. He's an exciting player. And remember, at the end of the day, Heisman voters really like something exciting. Something new. They love that kind of stuff. Now, are there any of these early bowl games worth watching? Not a lot. I won't lie to you. There's not a lot of these games that are really even worth watching. I'll give you a couple, though. I'll give... Can I come up with three? I'll try to give you three. Let me see if I can come up with three. A few of the bowl games that are worth watching. Because we're kind of in that lull now. College football is over, basically. We've got a few bowl games. And the big bowl games are still to come. But over the next week, until I see you all next Wednesday, I'll give you a couple of games that you might want to turn on. You might want to check these out. On Saturday, this coming Saturday, December 17th, 1:30 Mountain Standard Time, check out the Las Vegas Bowl. Might be worth watching. San Diego State, very, very good defense. Houston, I know they lost their head coach, Tom Herman, but they've got a pretty good defense, and they've got a very good offense as well. San Diego State, though, has a running back that you need to see. Donnell Pumphrey is the second leading rusher in the country. In the country. Pretty fun to watch. Check out Pumphrey. And then Houston has a freshman named Ed Oliver, defensive tackle. He might be the best freshman in the country. So Houston's defense, San Diego State's offense, that's not what either team is necessarily known for. It's just the opposite. But you might want to check out those two players, if nothing else. That's this coming Saturday. Also on Saturday, just after that, 3:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Camellia Bowl. Camellia? Camellia Bowl? Camellia Bowl? I don't know. These bowl names are idiotic anymore. Appalachian State versus Toledo. Now, you might remember early in the season, Appalachian State almost beat Tennessee at Tennessee. So App State can play a little bit. And Toledo, I don't know that they're great, but they score about 40 points a game. So Toledo's going to go out and put out some offense. If you want to see some offense, if you want to see a high score, maybe the Camellia Bowl, however you pronounce this stupid bowl. Remember when it was just easy? It's the Peach Bowl. It's the Sugar Bowl. It's the Orange Bowl. Now we have about 37 names. I'm over the names. I know we have probably too many bowls, but I'm really over the stupid bowl-sponsored names. They're dumb. Okay, next Wednesday, a week from today. And I know, I'll talk to you all before that. But just in case you don't hear the show actually on the Wednesday that I release it, next Wednesday, December 21st at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Poinsettia Bowl, another stupid name. But the Poinsettia Bowl has Wyoming versus BYU. Yes, an old WAC matchup. And I'm not talking about WAC like something bad. I'm talking about that wild and crazy Western Athletic Conference. But Wyoming versus BYU might actually be a pretty entertaining game. You know, quarterback Josh Allen for Wyoming is pretty good. And the job that him and Craig Bohl, the head coach up at Wyoming, has done this year, who expected anything out of Wyoming besides us here at the Daily Dose? No one expected Wyoming to do anything. Wyoming's pretty solid. And then BYU is always good in bowl games. It seems like every year we look at some crazy bowl game and some crazy finish, and we're like, well, yeah, BYU is involved in that. Now, some of it, honestly, is because they let them off the BYU campus, and those boys just kind of go crazy. And they're just so excited to be there, they get in some crazy, wild finish game. BYU is always entertaining in those kind of games. So you might want to check out the Poinsettia Bowl and try to forget the stupid names of all these dumb bowl games. All right, let's talk a little bit of NBA. And I'm not going to talk much NBA because we've got a lot of NFL, a lot of things to get to. And like I told you before, we do have a very special interview that you've got to stick around for. But you know, there are a number of young teams in the NBA that are very, very talented this year. And a number of young teams, though, that despite all the talent, kind of struggling to win games. Why is that? Look at the Los Angeles Lakers. It's a talented roster. They're very, very young. They've now dropped to 10-16 on the season. Look at the Denver Nuggets. They've got talent. Talented team. They're sitting at 9-16. Phoenix has won just 7 games. Maybe the team I might be most disappointed in is the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves were a team that you looked at the beginning of the season and said, with all that talent, they legitimately might be a playoff contender if they can figure some things out. Here's the problem with young teams in the NBA. As we look at that league and what's going to win them some games, the problem with young teams is, one, skill-wise, as talented as they are, as high as they jump, as long as they can hang in the air and all those things, skill-wise, they don't know how to play the game quite yet. They're still learning and polishing their game. They're young, they're talented, they're great dunkers. Oh man, he's a great dunker. Yeah, can he play? No. I don't know if Tim Duncan can even dunk anymore. I'll still take him. There's something to be said for that experience. So some of these young teams are just not skilled enough quite yet. They're still developing some of those grown man skills. Some of the problem with these young teams is they don't work hard enough. They don't have that veteran presence saying, hey, I've been there. I know how hard we have to work, and we aren't working that hard. There are a bunch of young guys going, well, I think we're working hard. I don't know. Are we working hard? I think we are. We survived the drills today. Nobody got sick today, so I think we're working hard. Like, I'm really sweating hard. And I say this because of my background as a coach. I know that sometimes we looked at some of these teams, you guys think you're working hard. You're not. The fact that you're running up and down in practice doesn't necessarily mean you're working at a championship level. It just means you're surviving the drills. It just means you're surviving the season. And so we're 25 games in. You're surviving the games, but you're not excelling at the games. And that's some of the problem with some of these young guys. The other problem, and one of the biggest problems that these young teams have, and I watch it again and again, I've seen it some with the Lakers. I see it a lot with the Nuggets being in Denver. I see them more than anyone else. But I've seen it with Minnesota. I've seen it with Phoenix. I've seen it with some of these young teams. They fail to make the key plays at the key times. Turn on and watch one of these teams. They're highly entertaining to watch. They're very, very talented. But down the stretch, they have no concept of time and score. They have no concept of what the most valuable play is going to end up being, because their mentality is, I'm going to have a huge dunk here and win us the game. No, you're not. How many times do you look back at a basketball game, especially, it happens in any sport though, and you say, it wasn't the game-winning shot that won us the game. It was that play. Remember back in the second quarter, and that guy took a charge, and it totally changed the game, and it totally took the wind out of them and gave it to us? That's when you win the game. And these teams don't know how to make those plays. They don't know how to, when another team is on a 7-0 run, they feel like, well, let's go down and hit a three and I'm going to get us right back in this. No, just stop the bleeding. Drive inside, get a high percentage shot, work really hard, get a lot of player movement, move the ball around and get a high percentage shot. That will get you back in the game. The play that you think you're making, I'm going to come down and bang a three and I'm really going to get us back into it. That's what's killing these teams. And so when you sit there and you look at these young teams, why aren't these teams winning? Sometimes it's the skills. Sometimes they can't make the free throws when the pressure's on. They can't make the clutch play because they're just not skilled enough. They're just not there yet. Sometimes they don't work hard enough. And you can tell in some of these games, if you are looking at one of these young teams and they're getting blown out by lesser teams, lesser talented teams, then you know they don't always work hard. They don't always bring it every single night. And that's something that young players in the NBA have to learn. That's something that young players at any level have to learn. You have to bring it every single night because the other team, they want to win too. Everybody wants to win. And the last thing, they just don't know how to make the key plays. They don't understand what the key plays truly are in those big games. And when you need a crunch time play, you need to get a high percentage shot. You need to take care of the basketball. You need to get a big stop. Most of these teams are failing every single night. I watched the Denver Nuggets. There are nights, there are 8 plays that need to be made. If you make a free throw, if you get a rebound, if you get a stop here, if you get a score here. If they made any of the 8, they would win the game. They literally go 0 for 8 and don't make any of them. Sign of an inexperienced team. And we are seeing it a lot in the NBA this year. Hey, we've got a lot to still get to. Still got to talk a lot of NFL. Got a very, very important interview that I want you all to stick around for. And as we do every single week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the Powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the Powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
Yeah, every time I go to get new body armor or some more drones, I always go to Amazon. But I don't just go to any Amazon. I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon. So this way I can help out my favorite podcast with every purchase I make. And I know I purchase a lot. Get to the chopper now!
NFL Week 14, now in the books. You know, it's funny, because the season is now, we're 14 weeks into the season. We just have 3 games remaining in the regular season. We're still learning things. We're still figuring things out about different teams. We still look around the league and we're like, I thought I knew that, but didn't quite know that. A few things we want to take a look at real quick. The Oakland Raiders. Quarterback Derek Carr might be the MVP. He might be the MVP. And I know getting swept by the Kansas City Chiefs is going to hurt his case. And the fact that he was awful against the Chiefs, with a lot of riders, with a lot of people that are going to vote for that award, probably eliminates Derek Carr. You look at that game. Carr went 17 for 41 for 117 yards. And now, if Oakland does face Kansas City in the postseason, it will be in Arrowhead Stadium. We know how difficult that place is to play. We specifically know that Derek Carr seems to struggle a little bit in cold weather. But you know, the fact that he was so bad and that Oakland lost, to me, kind of strengthens his case, doesn't it? You know, if Derek Carr sits or if Derek Carr struggles and the Raiders just keep winning, you know, we've seen teams do that. We've seen, you know, big-time quarterbacks sit out. Maybe, I don't know, be suspended, and their team just keeps winning. Like, they don't miss a beat. You know, certain guys that wear Uggs, you know, pretty boys like that. It doesn't seem like Carr is as valuable. If he sits out and they win without him, is he just as valuable? No. No. He sits out and they fall apart without him. If Derek Carr doesn't play well, the Raiders are going to struggle badly. But here is one thing I've noticed, and here is one thing that I've kind of learned this past week and maybe the week before. Derek Carr was rolling along this NFL season. I mean, rolling along. Looking strong. Had 20 touchdowns. Had just 4 interceptions. Since that finger injury that he suffered against the Carolina Panthers, you know he has just 2 touchdowns? You know his quarterback rating has dropped to 40.4? And on Thursday night, the Raiders dropped from a 1 seed back to a 5 seed in the AFC. Is the finger bothering him? I don't know. It's just a little finger. What's the big deal about it? I'll tell you what it is. That's the last thing that touches the football when you release it. That's the last thing he feels as it comes off his hand. The Raiders still have a few tough games too. Still have the Chargers. Still have the Colts. Still have the Broncos. They have to get 1 game ahead of the Kansas City Chiefs because the Kansas City Chiefs did sweep them. The Chiefs, meanwhile, have the Titans, the Broncos, and the Chargers. It's kind of a toss-up on that. I'd say the Chiefs probably have a little bit of a tougher schedule. But they do get Denver at home, which will help. Speaking of those Denver Broncos, they aren't mathematically out of the playoffs yet, but I'm telling you what, the Denver Broncos are walking a very, very fine line. You know, it's kind of funny because I do cover the Denver Broncos. I do a number of articles about them. I write for a local publication about them. And it's funny, on the weeks that they win, especially on the weeks, because the way that the Broncos have won over the last few years, they've won ugly. They've been winning, but you know, they've won a lot of ugly games. There's not a lot of commentary on what I write. You can write an article, you can say Broncos win, blah, blah, blah. Here's, you know, a storyline, or maybe here's a different angle that you put out there. Not much comment. Let them lose a game or two like they have the last few weeks. Oh, the comments are coming out. The comments are coming out. And it just, I mean, you sent out an article. I wrote one actually this last week. You know, who's to blame for the Broncos' woes? Who's to blame for what the Broncos have done? They're struggling. Why? Why are they struggling? And you just get so many people that want to tell you what's what. They're so mad. They just want to... Well, I'll tell you what. It's those doggone players. That's what it is. It's the players and it's the coaches. And you got some of the things right in your article, but I'll tell you what. It's the players and it's the coaches, and they've got to take some responsibility for what they're doing. Calm down. Settle down. You never see people quite as mad as when the team gets beat. And then you've got to write about it. And I'll be honest, there's part of me that enjoys it a little bit because it is funny to see everybody's comments. The quick reaction to the Denver Broncos right now is that it's the offense's fault. Look, I get it. The offense is bad. The offensive line is absolutely horrible. If you go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com, you can see an article that I put up about the Denver Broncos. They may have just signed a new offensive lineman or two. You have to go over there and check that out. But the offensive line is horrible. As bad as it was last year, it's worse this year. Quarterback's getting sacked on Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. Quarterback Trevor Siemian was hit 10 times. Now remember this, hits are more important than sacks. Everybody wants to throw out the sacks number. How many times did he get sacked? Oh, he only got sacked 3 times. Big deal. Who cares? It makes no difference. How many times did he get hit? You might not actually sack him. He might get rid of it. But if you hit him 10 times, you're wreaking havoc on that offense. Sacks aren't as important. Hits are highly important. Hurries are highly important. So yes, the offense for the Denver Broncos is bad. But let's not pretend that the defense is fine. The defense isn't fine, Bronco fans. I know they only allowed 13 points. I realize that. And I know the first reaction is, well, they only allowed 13 points. They ought to win that game. You should have been able to score 14. I get it. But they also allowed nearly 140 rushing yards in the first half alone. They also allowed the Tennessee Titans to hold onto the football for over 20 of the first 30 minutes. Yes, Denver's offense going 3 and out kills them. You have to put some drives together. At the same time, when you can't stop the opposing team's running game, and they're just running it down your throat again and again and again, your offense can't get back on the field. So it's both sides of the football right now for the Broncos. And let's be real clear. The 13 points might be more of a commentary on the Titans' offense, because at halftime, be real honest, that game felt like Tennessee should have been up 28-0, maybe 31-0, didn't it? Denver has problems on both sides of the football. It's not just one side. Now, one thing we do have to talk about. Did you see Aqib Talib? Did you see the play by Aqib Talib? We're watching that play, and my daughter walks in. My daughter's 11. She walks in, and she sees the Aqib Talib play. And you don't know what kids are thinking. You don't know what adults are thinking. And she just looks at what he did. And if you missed it, here's what happened. First half, Tennessee Titans wide receiver Harry Douglas blocked very low on Broncos cornerback Chris Harris. And let's be clear, is it a legal play? Sort of. It looked like he came from the front, so I would say it probably was legal, but it was right at the edge of being on the side, and he just dove at his knees. It's legal. It's also kind of a cheap play. It's a cheap shot. You don't have to block him that way. You do it hoping that he's scared that you're going to dive at his knees the rest of the day. That's why you do it. Let's be real clear. On the next play, and Harris had to be helped from the field. Took him down. Looked like, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a hyperextension on that knee. Had to be helped from the field. On the next play, Aqib Talib went after Douglas. And I'm not talking about a football move. I'm not talking about, well, I'm going to come up and jam you. I'm talking about he grabbed a hold of Douglas and just started hooking. Like, Talib was just like, no, you want to fight? Let's fight. Let's go. He didn't care. Talib went after him. And I've heard a number of people. Remember, like I said, I get a lot of comments after a big loss. Had a lot of comments. I heard a lot of people, you know, Talib's an idiot. Talib's a dirty player. Talib has done this. And remember, Talib poked a guy in the eyes. It was undisciplined. It was a dangerous play. It cost the Broncos 15 yards. But if you don't agree with what Aqib Talib did, I'm going to go ahead and guess you probably never played organized sports. You have to have each other's backs. There's no way you're going to cheap shot my teammates. That's not going to happen. See, that's why hockey allows fighting. Sometimes you have to police yourselves. So when my 11-year-old daughter, who does play organized sports, walked into the room and she saw the play, she saw what Douglas did, and then she saw what Talib did to it, she said, yeah, that's why Aqib Talib's my favorite player. And I understand it. Because I want someone who has my back. I want someone who's going to defend my team. Hate him, dislike him if you want to. Give me Aqib Talib every single time. I want that guy. I want him on my team. The Dallas Cowboys lost just their second game all season. And quarterback Dak Prescott finally struggled. We figured he would struggle at some point. He struggled a lot on Sunday night. He went 17 for 37 for just 165 yards. Dallas lost 10-7 to the New York Giants. And they lost to Eli Manning, who, let's be real honest, probably was worse than Dak was. Eli Manning looked horrible. I know we've had Eli on the show before, and he sounded a little bit like, you know, Sling Blade. Best thing about that, we got to see what bandwagoning turncoats sports fans truly are. There were people, after one game, after one, let's be honest, bad game for Dak Prescott, people in Dallas already asking for Tony Romo. He had one bad game. Dak was struggling. He was off, for whatever reason. But you know what? Maybe instead of blaming Dak Prescott, you should be asking why your coach had him throw the ball 37 times while Ezekiel Elliott only got 24 carries. And you know, Dak actually got sacked 3 times. So that's 40 times your head coach, your smart head coach, your Ivy League head coach asked a rookie quarterback to throw the ball instead of run it. 40 to 24. I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I'm just a local Colorado guy. Born and raised in Broomfield. I don't have the Ivy League education. But I can tell you this. I'm not having that rookie quarterback throw the ball 40 times if I have Ezekiel Elliott standing behind him. Let's flip that. Hey, Zeke, you're getting it 40 times tonight. And you know what? You might struggle on carries 1 through 35, but I'll bet by the time we get up 36, 37, 38, you bust one and we win this game. And that is the problem that Jason Garrett has always had. He won't do it. He never has done it. You can keep waiting. They better hope that doesn't come back and haunt them in the playoffs. And I have a sneaking suspicion that it might. The Miami Dolphins have lost quarterback Ryan Tannehill to a sprained ACL. Now they've got to try to win a game or two with their backup, Matt Moore. We don't know exactly how long Tannehill's going to be out. Maybe he comes back and he doesn't miss a game. But it looks like Matt Moore is probably going to have to start a game or two. Take heart, Dolphins fan. Don't worry, Dolphins fan. You're okay. It's all right. I know yesterday the report was coming out. Tannehill had tore his ACL. He was done. It doesn't matter. Makes no difference. And I'm not saying Matt Moore is a great quarterback. I'm not saying like Matt Moore is this hidden gem. I'm not even saying Matt Moore is even average. Miami Dolphins fan, what I'm saying is, can you really tell the difference between him and Tannehill? Like if I just put them both in plain jerseys, could you spot the counterfeit? Your best hope is that your defense and your running game are clicking and rolling. If you're asking too much from Matt Moore or Ryan Tannehill or Jay Fiedler or Chad Henne or Cleo Lemon or whoever, you're in a world of trouble. So whether Tannehill's hurt or not, doesn't really matter that much. Play defense and run the football and you'll probably be okay. Ask anything from your quarterback, yeah, you're probably going to be in trouble. The Los Angeles Rams fired head coach Jeff Fisher on Monday, just a day after he clinched yet another losing season. You know, the Rams are now 4-9. 4-9. Remember when they started off kind of quick? They won like a game or two. Hey, he's really doing it. Remember what he told us in Hard Knocks? He's really doing it. Now they're 4-9 with just 3 games left. You know, Fisher was 31-45-1 with the Rams over nearly 5 years. Here's my only question. What changed? Like, what changed? He got fired for going 4-9. Fisher was 27-36-1 prior to the season, right? Like, all of a sudden, now he's really bad? He was bad before. He's always been bad. This feels more like a PR move. I don't understand. You just gave him a contract extension going into the season. Oh, yeah, he's horrible. No, he's horrible. We're going to give him a contract extension. Now, he really is bad. No, let's fire him. We better fire him. No, he's still getting paid. He's going to take that contract extension right to the bank. But, you know, the weird thing is, again, I'm here in Colorado. I'm not actually coaching. I'm not actually an NFL coach. I've never coached football in my life. I've done some basketball coaching. That's my background. And yet, I have the same number of winning seasons coaching the Rams that Jeff Fisher does. Kind of weird. A little bit weird. Now, I don't know this for a fact. And I don't like to put out rumors and that kind of thing on the Daily Dose. That's not really how we do things. We try to get fact. We try to, you know what we have locked up. But I'm told that Jeff Fisher was told about his firing on Monday sometime right between 7 and 9. Right in that area. Not a surprise. And finally, the Buffalo Bills might be firing head coach Rex Ryan very, very soon. Could be coming. Rex Ryan, maybe he lasts the week. Maybe he gets through to the next week. But you know, the Bills are 6-7, and they've lost 5 of their last 7. And as bad as that is, that's actually not what's going to get Rex Ryan fired if he gets fired. See, rumor has it that the front office wants Ryan to play backup quarterback Cardale Jones. Ryan wants to stick with starter Tyrod Taylor. Here's my problem with that scenario, if that's true. And that's kind of what people around the club are saying. Kind of hard to get them to really admit that they're doing. It's kind of hard to get the front office to say, yeah, we're telling him what to do. They're not going to ever admit to that. But the problem with that scenario, if it is true, that's a meddling front office. And if Ryan is fired, that's going to discourage quality coaches from going to Buffalo. Buffalo is a good sports town if you win up there. Yes, it's horrible to live in. But the fans are going to support like crazy. That is a loyal, psychotic fan base up there. But if the front office is meddling, telling you who to start at quarterback, if I'm a quality coach, now if you're just a loser coach that's looking for a job, you'll go take whatever you can get. But if I'm a quality coach, I'm not going there. There's no way. I'll go take that Rams job way before I'd go to Buffalo, if that's the case. And to be honest, I don't get why everyone is so mad at Rex Ryan. Yes, the Bills defense is struggling. And they're allowing 200-yard rushers, it seems like, every single week that they play. But don't forget, Rex Ryan said his defense would be better. That's what he hangs his hat on. That's what Rex Ryan does. He says, my defense will be better. And they are better. What's everyone complaining about? No, they're not better than when he first started. But remember last year, the Buffalo Bills defense was ranked 19th in the NFL. This year, 18th. See, the Bills are doing things. You might not like Rex Ryan. You might get mad at Rex Ryan. He's always kind of a blowhard loudmouth. You can't say the man's not producing. 18, last I checked, is ahead of 19. What's everybody so mad about? Calm down. You know, getting into this playoff stretch now, coming down to the wire, getting close, just 3 games left. And you see some of these teams that are out there. Of course, we know who the favorites are right now. The New England Patriots. Definitely still going to be one of the favorites. If you had to bet money right now, New England Patriots, probably the big dog out there. Dallas Cowboys, still out there. Kansas City Chiefs, got to take them pretty seriously. Still looking at someone like the Oakland Raiders. But I've got 4 teams for you. They're not the favorites. In fact, a couple of them may not even make the playoffs. They might not make it right now. There's a couple of them right now that aren't in. But I'm telling you, I don't want to see any of these 4 teams. If they're on your schedule, you've got problems right now. Let's count down 4 teams that are red hot at the right time. And if they carry it into the playoffs, they're going to be problems for their opponents. First team, and this team started off slow. They started off 4-5, but they've now won 4 in a row. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are getting it going. Running back Le'Veon Bell might be playing better than any player in the NFL right now. You know, in his last 4 games, Le'Veon Bell is averaging 155 yards per game. He has 5 touchdowns. Now, here's their remaining schedule as they go into the playoffs. They've got at Cincinnati. They are home against Baltimore, and they are home against Cleveland. Are they losing any of those games? The home against Baltimore game, I expect that to be a competitive game. Are they losing any of those 3 games? There is a good chance, a real good chance, the Pittsburgh Steelers are going 11-5. They're not going to lose again. We'll see what they do in the playoffs. But with Le'Veon Bell getting going, keeping that defense off the field a little bit, we know that defense sometimes, they can be a little hit and miss. And if you can go play action and give Ben Roethlisberger some time, Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be very, very dangerous down the stretch. I'll give you another team. Team that is hot right now. They started slow too. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were 1-3 to start the season. And everyone was looking at them going, it's the same Buccaneers team. I know they're younger and they've got Jameis Winston, but it's the same old team. Now, they have won 5 games in a row. Well, yeah. They've won 5 games in a row, but they play in the NFC South. Who really cares? No, no, no. They beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and they beat the Seattle Seahawks. Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a dangerous, dangerous team. If they do get into the playoffs, and right now they would just barely make the cut, that's a team you don't want to see. That's a young team. They might be young. They're very talented. They're kind of too dumb to realize they shouldn't go to a favorited team and beat them. They don't know. They're just out there playing. They don't have any idea. Up next for Tampa, they play the Dallas Cowboys. Going to be a very, very interesting game. Cowboys coming off a loss. Buccaneers playing as well as anyone in the NFL right now. I'll give you my third team. Third team that is playing red hot right now. The Tennessee Titans. You know, all season, they have been trying to get above 500, and they finally did it on Sunday against the defending Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. But it isn't so much that they're winning. That's not actually what is impressing me quite as much. It's the way that Tennessee is winning. And I told you a little bit earlier, a few weeks back, that is a team that if they can get some things together, if they can figure some things out, they're kind of built for the postseason. They run the football. They play good defense. And when they get it into the red zone, quarterback Marcus Mariota is almost unstoppable. Do you realize the Tennessee Titans lead the NFL in scoring touchdowns in the red zone? Because what do you do with Marcus Mariota? He gets rid of the ball so quickly. It's out of his hands so fast, you don't have time to get the pass rush to him. And if you bring too many people, he'll beat your pass rush, and his feet are quick enough to outrun you. That's a dangerous, dangerous team. Again, the Titans aren't in the playoffs right now. If they make it in, that is a team that could surprise some people. And that is a team you do not want to see going down the stretch, playing very, very well. DeMarco Murray, very, very good. And it's not just Murray. Derrick Henry is a punishing running back. Remember? Derrick Henry, kid from Alabama? Yeah, he is a punishing running back. Tennessee Titans are a team you got to watch. I'll give you one more team to keep an eye on. One more team that is getting hot right now. And one team that was actually left for dead earlier in the season. Remember when the Green Bay Packers were 4-6? Remember Aaron Rodgers? He wasn't talking to his family because apparently his girlfriend Olivia Munn was poisoning him against his family. She was ruining his career. You know, we always hear those things. We always hear, oh, this new girlfriend, she's ruining his career. It doesn't have anything to do with what's on the field. It's always the girlfriend. Remember Tony Romo? It didn't have anything to do with the fact down in Dallas that Tony Romo had a horrible defense. It was all the fact that he was dating Jessica Simpson. I've got news for you. When they step on the field, that stuff goes away. But earlier in the season, everybody was talking about the Green Bay Packers. They're horrible. Aaron Rodgers, he's not the same kind of guy. Where are all those people now? The Packers are 7-6, and Rodgers is hot. Aaron Rodgers has 32 touchdowns this season. He has just 7 interceptions. Over the last few weeks, 371 yards, 351 yards, 313 yards. They blew out Seattle on Sunday. Green Bay Packers are hot. And they were a team that we all kind of forgot about and said, oh, yeah, well, they're not going to the playoffs, so I guess it's someone else's, but they're not going. They still have some work to do. Packers aren't in yet. The Green Bay Packers are a team I would not want to see as we head down the stretch. Packers are very, very dangerous. I told you that we had a very important interview coming up. We have got to get to that right now. As promised, we are joined right now on the Daily Dose Hotline by a very special guest. This is someone that I wanted to bring on. It's someone I've been talking about just recently. and someone that I wanted to make sure to have on. This is a personal friend and the founder of the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund. You've heard us talk about it a little bit on the show, but Bill Betts has been involved with U Sports for a number of years, which is how I got to know him. I wanted to bring Bill on the show, let him explain a little bit better about the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund than I have. I just wanted to bring him on. Bill, thanks for joining us. I really do appreciate you being on the Daily Dose today.
Hey, Clint, thanks. It's great to be here. Appreciate your time.
Bill, can you just tell us a little bit? I've talked a little bit about it, but can you just tell us a little bit of what the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund actually does?
Well, Clint, it's real simple. As you know, and some of your listeners may know, I lost my beautiful son, Billy, to a camping accident in August of 2015. And though it was a real tough loss, obviously, for my family and for Billy's little brother, Jack, and certainly those close to me, at that time, I decided to do something to connect my family and my friends with the lacrosse community. And shortly thereafter, we started a little website and a little fund called bb33lax.com. And the idea is, Clint, is to show the community and the lacrosse community specifically that the sport and the connection with the guys that he played with and the women that play at East High School, they're so connected, as so many youth sports teams and leagues are, that I wanted to continue that into the future. So this past March, when the season started at East, the head coach had dedicated the season to my son, and they retired his jersey number. All the boys on the lacrosse team had number 33 in the back of their helmets, and thus we launched bb33lax.com. And the idea is, Clint, is that there are a lot of families out there whose kids play lacrosse, and sometimes those invoices and sometimes those bills can get a little expensive.
Sure.
And I wanted to create a fund where we could help support some of those families to send their kids on lacrosse spring break tournament trips, and that's the reason for the fund. And so we started this, and hopefully this coming year we'll have a vehicle with which to augment some families' expenses and take care of those expenses for them to send their kids on spring break lacrosse trips. As a parent, like I said, I've seen some of those bills come and go, and some of them at good times and some of them at not so good times with our economy.
Sure.
And this is a way of connecting ourselves through the lacrosse program to help with some of those expenses for some families out there.
Well, Bill, I love what you're doing, and you had reached out to me, you had asked me a little bit about it, and it wasn't anything where you had said, can you promote this? That wasn't the point at all, but you had asked me a little bit about it, and when I heard the fund that you were starting, it was something that kind of spoke to me, because I know the expenses that are out there for youth sports, and it's getting more and more expensive all the time, but I also know how important it is for these kids, the relationships that they form, the life lessons that they learn, the things that they get out of sports, you can't replace those things.
Well, and that's a good point, Clinton. Thank you for bringing that up. I know how important it was for my sons to play high school sports and middle school sports. And we started out, I started coaching Billy when he was five in youth baseball. And you're exactly right. Those bonds get stronger and stronger with each level that they play up. And I can remember Billy coming back from his tournament his freshman year, and the seniors had given him a rather unique haircut, shall we say.
Sure, sure.
But those bonds that he had with those guys were everlasting, and those were so special to him. And those were lessons in life, not about a bad haircut, but those were lessons in life that he took with him to the University of Arizona after he graduated. And they're about strength and courage and commitment and perseverance and all of the lessons that youth sports teaches our kids. They certainly shone through with my son, and I want to provide that opportunity and help provide that opportunity for other families and other kids. And that's the real mission behind the mission statement behind bb33lax.com.
Well, I love that you're doing this. You know, when I heard the news, it was something that definitely, like I said, spoke to me, made me feel like it was something that we needed to reach out and do. But I love that you're doing this. I love the direction that this is going and that it is going out to help kids. There's a number of different ways that people can donate. You can, of course, go, like Bill said, you can go to bb33lax.com. You can donate directly there. It goes through PayPal. They make it really, really simple. You can just use your credit card if you want. They make it really, really simple. Bill, I believe they can go to any key bank too, can't they?
Yes, they can, Clint. Thank you. And if you go to a key bank and just reference bb33lax.com, and they'll take a donation from $5 to whatever dollars is fine. We also, Clint, I have done a little cross-promotion with a group out of Baltimore called Glove Sticks, okay. G-L-O-V-E-S-T-I-X, which was founded by a family back there whose sons play hockey and lacrosse. And Glove Sticks is a fun product. I'll let your listeners take a look at that website. But Glove Sticks is doing a cross-promotion where if your listeners purchase a product from the Glove Sticks website and enter in the code BB33 under the promo code, some of those profits from those sales go back to the BB33 LAX fund. So it's just getting going, Clint. I'm so grateful for this opportunity today and for your listeners to chime in. And I'm hoping that next year we'll have a conversation about many more scholarship foundation funds that we can help put more kids into more lacrosse tournaments and more trips. And I'm grateful for our time today, Clint. Thank you so very much.
Bill, thank you. I'm not going to take any credit for this because we're just doing what we're supposed to do, but I thank you. Hey, remember, and if you're out there Christmas shopping and say you're sitting there and you say, well, I'd love to donate, but I don't have money. I've got to do some. That's great. You can do some Christmas shopping. Go to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Be sure to put Daily Dose in the coupon box at your checkout, and they'll give 10% off your order. They'll take that 10%, send it to us at the Daily Dose, and we are donating 100% of anything we get to the Billy Best Fund. Bill, I thank you so much for coming onto the show today. I really do appreciate it. I wanted you to be able to come on. I tried to, you know, talk a little bit about it, but I want you to be able to come on and give your side of exactly what it is that the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund is. I think it's a very, very worthwhile fund. I think it's something that a lot of people can get behind. I thank you for your time. I appreciate you being on here today.
All right, Clint. I appreciate your time as well. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, we saw something a little bit historic on Saturday at the Heisman Trophy ceremony. And I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson being the youngest player to win it. He was the youngest player to win it at 19 years, 337 days. He just barely beat out former winner Alabama running back Mark Ingram, who was 19, 356 days. And I'm not talking about Jackson being the first Heisman winner ever from the University of Louisville. No, that's actually not it. The 2016 Heisman Award had something else historic about it, and you know, it was just the fifth time in history that it has happened. Now, is that a coincidence that this happened for the fifth time, and every single week on the Daily Dose, we do a top five? Possibly. Conspiracy theories do abound. So let's just start right here, right now. Number five on our list just took place on Saturday. You might not realize this, but it was just the fifth time that teammates made the final list invited to the Heisman ceremony. You know, Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma may have been playing better than any quarterback in the country down the stretch. He finished his regular season with 38 touchdowns and over 3,600 yards. And his wide receiver from Oklahoma, Dede Westbrook, caught 74 passes for nearly 1,500 yards, and he had 16 touchdowns. Mayfield finished third in the final voting. Westbrook finished fourth in the final voting. And like I said, it was just the fifth time in history, at least since 1982, and they started inviting all of the finalists to New York, that teammates have been official finalists invited to that Heisman ceremony. Who are the other four that have been invited? Can you think of those? Sets of teammates that were invited. Number four on our list. This group got invited twice. In 2004 and 2005, USC quarterback Matt Leinart and running back Reggie Bush were both invited to the Heisman ceremony. It actually happened twice, but the NCAA, remember, they've told us to pretend that one of them didn't happen. So, I mean, who are you going to believe? You know, them or your own flawed memories? Remember, in both 2004 and 2005, Leinart and Bush were tearing up college football. In 2004, Leinart won the Heisman. Bush finished fifth. And then USC went on to win the national championship, beating Oklahoma. In 2005, Reggie Bush won the Heisman, Matt Leinart finished third, and the Trojans lost to Texas in the championship game. Of course, then Reggie Bush was found to have been getting a free house to live in, and so the NCAA asked us to all look into the Men in Black memory eraser and pretend none of these things ever happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you will, look right here.
Yeah, remember that? Only the fourth time. Leinart and Bush, both from the same team, both got invited to the Heisman ceremony. Number three on our list actually also took place in 2004. Oklahoma sent two more teammates to the Heisman ceremony, quarterback Jason White and running back Adrian Peterson. It wasn't just the Trojans that had teammates at that 2004 Heisman ceremony. Heisman voters also chose to invite Jason White, who finished third and had passed for 33 touchdowns and had won it in 2003, and running back Adrian Peterson. Peterson finished second in 2004, and at the time, he had the highest finish ever for a freshman. Adrian Peterson had run for over 1,800 yards and scored 15 touchdowns. So Oklahoma's had it twice. That's number three on our list, Jason White and Adrian Peterson. Number two on our top five times that teammates have been invited to the Heisman ceremony. Number two took place in 2002. Miami quarterback Ken Dorsey and running back Willis McGahee. Of course, in 2002, USC quarterback Carson Palmer won the Heisman, and he just barely beat out Iowa quarterback Brad Banks. But Miami running back Willis McGahee had rushed for 27 touchdowns, and he finished fourth. And his teammate quarterback Ken Dorsey threw for over 3,000 yards and 26 touchdowns. Of course, Ohio State knocked off that Miami team in the Fiesta Bowl. Yes, it was on a little bit of a controversial interference call, but we all remember that game, and that was just the second time it had ever happened, Ken Dorsey and Willis McGahee. So when was the first time it ever happened that teammates got invited to the Heisman ceremony? Actually took place back in 1994. Now, we talked about just briefly, the news had just come out when we did the show last week. Colorado running back Rashawn Salaam passed away last week. Sad, sad story coming out of Boulder, Colorado. He had won the Heisman with over 2,000 rushing yards and 24 touchdowns. Who was the runner-up that year? Do you remember? Runner-up to Rashawn Salaam was Penn State running back Kajana Carter. He had over 1,500 yards rushing and 23 touchdowns, and his teammate, quarterback Kerry Collins, finished fourth with nearly 2,700 passing yards and 21 touchdowns. Now, the Nebraska Cornhuskers would unanimously win the national championship. Penn State was number two. Colorado was number three. It was the first time that teammates were finalists in the Heisman voting. And let's be honest, it's probably most likely the first time that Kajana Carter or Kerry Collins have ever been named in anything on our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, next week on the show, we will be previewing that next round of college football bowl games. And you know, with the holidays coming, I might just have a Christmas wish list for a number of people out there. Of course, NFL stories, the NBA is getting better, maybe some college hoops, and of course, the Daily Dose Top 5. You've always got to make sure that you stick around for that. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you download it. Wherever it is that you get it, if it's iTunes, if it's Stitcher, if it's Podcast Republic, if it's Blog Talk Radio, wherever it is that you subscribe to the show, please do us a favor and just go click that little subscribe button. That actually helps us get seen a little bit more, and they really do like to see how many subscribers that we have. Remember, you can contact the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or hit us on Facebook or Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. We would love to hear from you. Be sure to head over to lootcrate.com/Daily Dose. Get some of that holiday shopping done and enter the coupon code Daily Dose to get 10% off. Have to say thank you to Bill Betts. I appreciate you coming on, talking about the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund that we are trying to support and doing our best to get a few more eyes on that. Whatever you can do to help out that fund, you know it's going to help some kids that can really, really benefit from that. I'd like to thank Bill Betts for stopping by and discussing that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.